Did you know it's National Parks Week? Perfect timing for us because one of our goals this week, a trip out to Long Island's Sagamore Hill to the shingle-style Queen Anne with the huge wraparound veranda that was the summer home of President Teddy Roosevelt.
Back, you got to back way, way up. I got to get the house.
It sits atop a hill overlooking the water, was packed with tourists.
All the usual no's, no eating, no drinking, no smoking, no touching, no cameras inside, no photography of any type.
Out on the porch, Professor Gerald Benjamin joins us.
I like this house because I think, you know, for a president's home, it's an unpretentious place. The character of the president rises when you walk through the house.
What are some of the things you see inside here?
Well, the room I love the most is the room with the great fireplace and the rugs made out of animal skins and the hunting trophies on the wall, the African trophies and the Western trophies.
You know, today we'd say, heads on the wall and skins on the floor. This is a man who somehow needed to, you know, show his bluster, his manliness, and sometimes that extends into, you know, wars. And what would you say?
Yeah, he was a macho guy.
You could say that. Teddy led the Rough Riders into Cuba during the Spanish-American War, broke up trusts, regulated railroads, was the first president to have a press secretary, taking his causes directly to the people. And when he failed to win the party nomination in 1912, he formed his own party. Familiar? Professor Benjamin dabbled in New York Republican politics himself. He's now a professor of political science at SUNY, State University of New York, New Paltz. We want to find out, what can we learn from Teddy Roosevelt?
Joe, first of all, what happens to your heart when you come here to Sagamore Hill?
Well, it's wonderful for me to come back here. I regard Teddy Roosevelt so positively. He was my favorite. He is my favorite president, I think one of the great American presidents, and of course, a great New Yorker, and I'm a very parochial New Yorker.
It was Teddy Roosevelt, the Republican, but also the progressive.
Well, he was larger than life. He was a war hero. He understood and believed that the United States could be a world of world importance at a time where we were really not at the center of world events. He was for social reform. He was for countervailing the power of the great corporations that were rising to importance in the late 19th and early 20th century. He was for limiting the workday. He was for cleaning up the food industry. So he had a philosophy. He had foreign policy philosophy, and he had a domestic policy philosophy. He wasn't just a person who advanced symbols or slogans.
But he was also kind of bombastic, even before he got into office. You know, there were the Rough Riders. He made sure people got pictures of him going down to Cuba to fight, you know, in the Spanish-American War.
He was a career manager. He had goals, and he sought them, and His persona was larger than life. He was an extraordinary man.
And truth be told, part of the goal today is personal. Young Cemetery is here. It's where Roosevelt is buried. It was founded by my forefathers. The family joke was, we couldn't get buried there, to which my mom would say, don't be in a rush. Generations loved Roosevelt. In 1901, he did something no other president did, inviting an African-American, Booker T. Washington, to dinner at the White House.
There was a great uproar, and he was condemned, and he had to spin that. He actually released a message that, there were no women present at the meal. You know, because he was accused by Southern racists of, you know, putting American womanhood at risk.
So we've sort of defined a little bit. There's so much more you can say about Teddy Roosevelt. But I'm sure a lot of people are saying, well, then what happened? Because that's not the Republican Party that I know now.
Well, interestingly, in New York, the 20th century and even the late 19th century was an internal struggle in the Republican Party between more conservative and more progressive elements. And then we found that to elect Republicans, you had to elect Republicans who could win in the population centers. So we had Tom Dewey, we had Nelson Rockefeller, George Pataki, who was more conservative than the other two.
But still, Republicans, and I remember my grandmother tore up her DAR application because Marian Anderson wasn't allowed to sing at the DAR convention, the great black singer. They considered themselves in the forefront of civil rights. Decades earlier, they were for the income tax. I mean, describe Republicans.
And feminism, and the women, the feminists in New York were Republicans, and the early women in the state legislature were Republicans, and the first Civil Rights Act to be passed by a state was was passed under a Republican governor by a Republican legislature. But what happened was that the kind of Republicans that prevailed in New York stopped being important in the country because there's a great redefinition of the divide, the political divide, starting in the 60s with Goldwater and the great confrontation at the Republican National Convention between Rockefeller and Goldwater.
And you say Rockefeller. Just remind us, what was a Nelson Rockefeller Republican?
Sometimes described as the last Rockefeller Republican in New York. It was we like to call ourselves fiscally conservative, and we also like to think of ourselves as being able to run the state more efficiently than the Democrats. We advanced medical care broadly. We advanced social change. We built the state university. But what happened was that the party kept moving to the right. Ultimately, in 1980, Ronald Reagan redefined the Republican Party center, and with great success, and the intellectual focus of the conversation in the United States changed to a Republican conversation, and the Southern Democrats lost control over the Southern states, and those states became Republican, I think, substantially in reaction to the Civil Rights Act of 1965 and following legislation. So we had a rightward movement of the Republican Party, but the New York Party couldn't move to the right because of the nature of its population and the nature of its politics. So its Republicans were stuck on the left side of the Republican Party, so to speak, and came less consequential nationally. Till now, we have actually a primary that counts in the Republican Party. It's extraordinary for me to see that as a person who's observed and participated in New York politics for all my life.
And the last standing Nelson Rockefeller Republican?
Well, some others. I think when I've talked to about this, I've said I'm skeptical about many of the Republicans I know in New York who stay in the party because they believe in some of the historic legacy that we have, how they're going to find a choice in this primary.
A primary that might actually produce a New York-centric president, former Senator Hillary Clinton, Brooklyn-born Bernie Sanders, or Republican Donald Trump.
He's a New Yorker of a different kind. I mean, he's a New Yorker who's extraordinarily accomplished in the real estate industry and in commerce, and he's extraordinarily smart about understanding the public mood. I'm skeptical about his capacity to be an effective and president, and a president that I trust with a finger on the button, you know.
Draw the line back to this beautiful veranda that we're standing on and the man who lived here and had such an impact from here. You know, are there qualities that you maybe see in a Teddy Roosevelt that maybe, you know, pieces of them people think they might see in the modern day candidates?
Right now, the world is transformed. We're involved in our conversation. We're involved in a transformed world. The communication is 24/7.
And you could say he started it.
The point I'm getting to is that there's almost a caricature of what you're supposed to be, and the candidates are reaching for what they're supposed to be, and they're supposed to be strong. So they're trying to appear strong. They're supposed to be leaders, so they have some notion of what being a leader is. Teddy Roosevelt didn't have to try to be those things. He was those things. And so in a way you could say that in some deep way he defined what, you know, you need to be willing to get bloodied in the arena, famous quotation, not stand on the sideline, watch and comment.
Well, but you're saying that it came by him naturally. It wasn't just looking like you would pick a fight. He found a cause and fought for it.
Remember that Roosevelt split the Republican Party. And to me, one of the analogies that's been less attended to as we've gone forward is Roosevelt turned the country over to Taft, metaphorically, then decided he wanted to be president. Taft wanted to be president. And the end of the day, Woodrow Wilson became president. The Democrat became president. So Roosevelt split the Republican Party and changed
between the progressives and the
the Bull Moose Party, and which was the progressives. His appeal to a great wing of the Republican Party. Some went with him. Many voted with him. Republicans didn't get enough votes to win in the Electoral College. Democrat became president, and Woodrow Wilson was president, and the world was transformed by his attitudes towards international relations in our engagement in the First World War and the post-war period and so on. And I think that we're observing the potential of a similar seismic shift and split in the Republican Party, and the consequence might well be the election of a Democrat president, and there'll be I'm not a soothsayer, but there'll be
history will flow.
History will change. And so not only internally, And I think that I'm worried. I'm worried that the alternatives that America has are what they are. I think America can do better.
Gerald, thank you so much.
Thank you. It's been a great pleasure talking to you. Thank you for inviting me.